everybody. Welcome to the Open Mic Comedy Podcast. I'm your host, Mark. If this is your first time here, welcome. If you're a returning listener, welcome back. This is a bonus series of podcast episodes called Comedy Night in the Spotlight, where I'll be speaking to those on the comedy circuit who run their own gigs and giving them the chance to tell you, the listeners, all about it, how you can get involved watching the comedy, and even if you're a comedian, how you can apply to perform. So today's guest is kind of, I'd say, up in the game for the open mic comedy lineups we've seen. They've secured such prestigious headliners such as Stephen Bailey, Ari Styler, Fatima El Ghori, Russell Hicks, Al Murray, plus many, many more to come, I assume. So it's my great pleasure to welcome to the podcast from Rise Up Comedy, Matthew Alley.
Yay! Hello, Mark.
Hi, Matthew. How are you doing?
I'm doing well, thank you. How are you?
I'm very well, thank you. I assume you're quite busy organising gigs for yourself and for the night itself.
Yeah, I definitely am. Yeah, I try and gig a lot. I gig probably like anywhere between 3 and 6 times a week, mostly 4 or 5, to be honest.
Wow.
And running the night. There's 2 of us that do it, so that's really helpful. But it is a lot running a night for sure.
Yeah. So how did it start then? And when did it start? It's Rise Up Comedy, isn't it? If I've not said that already.
Rise Up Comedy. I was going to say it, yeah. Go on. So Rise Up Comedy is in Kens and Rise in Northwest London. And it started, actually, Zach was the one who asked me to do it. So he'd been thinking about doing it. He lived in the area and was thinking about starting a night, and he wanted to do it with me. And initially I said, no, I don't want to do it. Yeah, because I don't like organizing other people's business. It's hard enough doing my own gigs, never mind everybody else. And I used to be like a captain on my rugby team, and I used to run a lot of, had to gather a lot of people for that and stuff. And I was like, once that was done and I hated it, I was like, never again. Organizing the squad every week, not for me. So Zach asked me originally, I said no. And then, like a lot of people, I wanted to do emceeing. I was convinced that like I would do well in it. So I wasn't getting the opportunities in other places. No one was giving me the night, understandably. So then I was like, all right then, Zach, I'll do it. That's how it started. And we had our first night September the 19th last year, 2023.
Cool. And how did that first night go? Did it meet all expectations or success from day one?
We talk about success when we're talking about just starting the podcast or starting in career and stuff. It's really hard to define success. So I think it was a success because we did the night. We had a full lineup of acts. There was a lot to learn from it. You know, it was a bit long. It felt long, and you don't want a night to feel long. Yes. But because it was our first night, we had great audience. You know, we were in a big room, and I'll talk about the space, I guess, and the challenges maybe of running a night. But it's a big room, so we had like just over 50 people, and that is a good number for it.
Yeah. Okay. So did you select the venue yourself, or Zach selected the venue, or did you go to the venue to say, we want to do a night here, or did they say, we want somebody to do something here to bring custom in? And
so Zach went to a few different places around his local area and actually looked for a few different venues, and he visited most and would send them to me, and I would go to the ones I could go to. And then that was the one that we chose. We chose because considering it's a big room, which is always a challenge, I think, when running a night, but the venue themselves are super, super supportive. They were really, really invested in the night. And that was one of the biggest reasons why we chose to do it. So we're at the Mason's Arms on Harrow Road, and they are so, so lovely, really invested in it financially and like effort wise as well. So that was actually the big reason why we went there. And at the time, Zach lived close by. It was literally 2 minutes from his house. Now he lives further than I do, so I'm glad.
So it's slightly bit him now. He's got to travel further.
He's got to travel far, boy.
So is it, so you say it's about a capacity of about 50-ish?
Max capacity we can get really is up to 80.
Wow.
Yeah. So it's a big room. And, you know, if you know anything, I guess, about comedy, a lot of people will say that a big room with high ceilings is not the best place to do comedy. And we have a big room with high ceilings.
Hence, you've got to up the game with some of the headliners to get it going again, I guess.
Exactly that. We need to get the drawing. Cool.
Sounds really cool. So where is the nearest, for those not actually sort of from around the London area, how's the easiest way to kind of get there? what's the nearest tube and transport and stuff.
Surprisingly, it's a lot easier. When people actually get there, they're like, you know what? That was really, really easy to get to. So the closest station is called Kensal Green, and it's on the Bakerloo line and the Overground. So if you're in London, you'll get the Bakerloo line, you get the Overground there, or you can get the Overground to a 10 minutes away on the Overground. Or if you're coming from outside of London, the closest train will go into Euston, and then you get the Overground from there, which is about 10 minutes. So, yeah, it's in zone two, so it's not far. It just seems that way. And it's a neighborhood. It's not metropolitan. It's not like people are walking by. So that's one of our challenges as well, trying to gather an audience, is we don't have passing pedestrians, for example. We have to be able to go out to them to get them in.
Okay. So, but if you're filling rooms and in that kind of scenario, things must be going well. You must be attracting a decent regular crowd.
We're not filling rooms. So, you know, I think it's so interesting. I think Instagram's so funny, right? Because we'll talk about like the acts and stuff that we get. And I think we are having successful nights. I will say that, you know, we've had 11 shows now. And now, you know, it's at the time of recording, but this is end of February, I guess. And we have had one sold out night. Okay. But we do have nights that range between 20 and 40, 45-ish. Audience members, I think it's successful that we get both return guests and audiences and local people. So, you know, we talk about bringing nights and open mic and stuff like that. We're really trying to get the community. And so we are getting those. It's just different. Yep. 1 week might be good, 1 week might not be so successful.
Yeah, okay, fair enough. So is it a, so if a comedian wants to apply as such for a night, is it a bringer situation, bringer and stayer, or is it a...
Yeah, so... It is.
Don't be shy. You can say it's a bringer. This is an interesting discussion, I think, with having the bringer situation, is that the majority of comedians I speak to don't like the idea of having a bringer. However, they all understand there's a need for this to happen.
No, for sure. And I know this is not like the podcast for it. It's probably the other one where you talk about like my own sort of comedy and stuff. But it's very interesting because, you know, when Zach and I created The Night, we basically had opposing views almost about every element of the comedy show, right? So he wanted to do a weekly one. I was like, I want to do it monthly. So we went to every 2 weeks, right? It runs every weeks on a Tuesday. He wants to do a bringer night. I wanted to do no bringer night. So we have both on the nights, okay? So we have bringer spots of 5 and 7 minutes, and then we have spots that we have allocated to ourselves that we can ask people that we want to do the show. And actually, next week on the 5th of March, so this may have passed. Sorry, I keep sending dates. I don't know if that fucks up your...
That's fine.
Also swearing.
That's fine as well.
But we've got... after the first show this year, which where we had Al Murray, we're trying to do an official pro night.
Okay.
So that's a smaller lineup and longer sets, and that will be that's just like almost like invite only. So if people ask or if we reach out to them. So to summarize, for our open mic nights, we have bringer spots, which is a form, and we have non-bringer spots, which is where we ask you.
Okay, I get you. So do you get? I take it you must start getting lots of applications these days then for the spots.
It is brutal. You know, I think there are two big challenges for running a night, right? The first one is getting an audience, because I would like to do, my aim for the show was to have a good show, right? I know I wanted to MC, but I was like, if I'm going to do it, I want it to be a good show. I fear that sometimes some open mics might be so self-serving that they forget that they're looking to put on a show. They're really thinking about how they want to MC, or I forget like this night's really important to people, right?
Yeah.
That's my own interpretation of it. So I wanted to run a good night. So getting an audience is important for that. And I think that's a real, real big struggle. You have to really put a lot of effort and time into it. The other part are booking acts, right? And I think there's so many elements to it. One, finding acts that you think are, I guess, good enough, quite frankly, because I didn't want to do a ground level, you know, my first 10 gigs, really. That wasn't what I was looking for. And I think Zach is the same. But the other part is I've met a lot of people, I know a lot of people, I know a lot of good acts out there, and there are just not enough spots to fill up.
Yeah.
Right. So people ask all the time, and I'm not someone who feels bad generally about people, but I genuinely feel really, really bad that I'm like, I can't put you on until, or I don't even know when, or just know. Like it's really, really difficult. So yeah, that's the element. So we get a lot of requests. And it's really hard.
No, I get that. I can imagine, especially when people see like the headliners and stuff like that. It's kind of like it's a big attraction to go and see somebody in a relatively small venue. Because the one thing I found quite funny, actually, this happened about a week ago, was that I saw a friend of mine on Facebook post up, just been to see Al Murray on his latest tour. And I'm thinking, you could have taken a trip into London and you could have seen him in effect, a pub.
Yeah.
However much you charge for those nights, I don't know how much it was. It was £6 or something like that.
£6. It was only £6, yeah.
So, you know, you can pay the big bucks and go and see him do his proper craft on stage as such. But that opportunity to see somebody in a smaller venue, I think is that's quite a niche thing. And I've come from the situation where I've been to see like a lot of musical acts and big bands and stuff, and you see them play a very small venue. And you kind of walk away sometimes from those smaller venues going, I can't go and watch them at the O2 now. I saw Foo Fighters in front of 200 people in Camden.
Oh, amazing.
You're like, what? I can't go anywhere. I can't go to Wembley Stadium to watch them because nothing will ever compete. But yeah. You also get the chance to see on the comedian side, I think the difference is that you see them get to hone their craft. They don't know what they're doing. They have an idea of where they're going, but they're trying to just tighten things up and stuff. Whereas musicians, you don't get that. They'll play the songs. They know their songs. They know everything backwards. It's not a case of, oh, we need to learn new stuff.
Mm.
You know, it's not something they've just created on the train down and they've got notes on and go, oh, can I make this work? And you see whoever, you know, Stephen Bailey or Al Murray or Russell Hicks or whatever, just try something new for the very first time in front of your eyes. And then you may see it again in a few weeks' time on a tour or on an Instagram clip in front of a lot of people. And you go, I saw that come to life. I saw it being born.
That's what I love about comedy so much, like just in like the grand scheme of things, is unlike a lot of the performance arts and stuff, there's this real like we're getting big acts and, you know, and people are really, really impressed by it. But I feel like comedy is one of those ones where, because it's both a rehearsal and the show, and the lines are blurred, like people are really willing to come down to try out new stuff because they have to. Like, it's not like you're rehearsing or whatever, like they have to do that. And it's very grounded. I feel like it's very grounded in reality in some senses, because the big acts that have come are always, and I mean this genuinely, always so lovely. Like, to my surprise, because I'm like, it sounds weird, but they don't need to, you know, like whatever, but they just, but then also they do, because you don't want to be like, have a, you know, quote unquote bad reputation or whatever. But it is really, really interesting because you do get to see it both as a performer. Like, it's really interesting to see the process that people are going through. And I think one of the reasons why I wanted to be able to get these acts is I have my own aspirations about developing as a comedian. And there is a difference between seeing someone doing their first 50 or 100 gigs working on what they're doing and someone who's been going for 11 years. The process is very, very different. And you do see these things. They show up and some things might not work, but it's how they bounce back from it that's really, really important. And I'm thinking about the last show that we had. Hopefully they don't mind me saying, we had Russell and Fatih on the last show that we had. And it wasn't our most successful night, if we're talking about success, right? You know, I feel bad when, as a promoter, I'm not able to put on a show where it's laugh riots 24/7, you know? And I take responsibility for that. But they were so understanding, complimentary, you know, just giving. They were like, this is the process, you know, both for us and for you, you know, you're going to have these nights, you're not, but they were like, we absolutely love it. And what you're doing is wonderful. And so it's just really, for me as a person, when I go to quiet nights that aren't my own, even this week, I had a really, really quiet audience week. And I went to a gig where it's smaller than the room I'm in. And I mean that literally. And it was seven people.
Yeah.
I drove an hour for it for free. Okay. And I would honestly say if about 4 or 5 months ago, I might be like, do you know what? I'm starting to get paid work now. Like, it's fine. Like, what am I doing in this room? No. I went there and I did it and I had a really good time. And I think everybody there had a good time. And It just showed, because the promoter of that night and the audience were really into it. But the host and the promoter of the night and the venue were really, really supportive. They treated it like it was 100 people. They were serving them drinks when they needed it to. They knew everybody by name. There was a lot of energy. And so I think that's what's really important about running the night, you know, and giving it respect no matter who's there. So I'm learning a lot from these acts, you know, about professionalism and just understanding that you're never too big or anything like that.
Yeah. I think I've said this to you in passing before, is I think sometimes where if you're, as a comedian, if you try to get onto nights and you can't get on, sometimes, personally for me anyway, I've had the thought in my head is I've never been accepted on this night. I'm never going to go to the night unless I'm on. I'm not going to go and visit that place because it's the time and it's the effort and it's et cetera, et cetera. But when you see like what you're trying to do, I think you can put those kind of feelings to one side and go, I'm going to see a professional do something that I can learn from. I'm going to be entertained, but I can also use it as an educational experience as well. And you just see how somebody feeds off of a crowd, or how they deal with somebody in the crowd, or how they make something up on the spot, on how it develops, and how it, you can just see their brain kind of ticking over, going, this is what I'm doing, this is how I'm going to do it. And then, okay, this hasn't worked, I'm now changing tact and things like that. And I think it's a testament when you can get names that will draw people in to go to a night that's for educational experience as well as entertainment. From my side, if you see what I mean.
Absolutely. We've had a few acts that we know come just to see the people they really, really enjoy, you know, and because they're, a lot of the acts are big fans of comedy. So there might be people that have really good followings on social media, but maybe not have, you know, Al Murray's been going for such a long time and he doesn't have a big following in comparison to a lot of people, because we only look at Instagram numbers or TikTok numbers, but he's got a following. So people are going to go to that show. Then there are people that we're going to have or have that might have hundreds of thousands, but they might not necessarily draw in tons of audience members because they don't have that legacy or that heritage, you know, of like their own performance, but they bring in two new people. And that's what we need. You know, we bring in someone to come and watch them because they have their fans. So, And that includes comedians. So we've had comedians come and watch, and we've had people come and try and book them for their own nights as well, which is really is interesting. It's a good way to go. It is. It's worked. So, you know, it's a good little networking opportunity. But I do enjoy the mix between having the bigger acts with the newer ones. I find it difficult because there is a stark contrast between... Yep. Someone within their first 10 or 15 gigs and then someone who's been going for X number of years in the pros. And I don't know if it's the same for everybody, but I feel a bit disjointed somehow. It feels like it sometimes feels like they shouldn't be in the same room. I'm not too sure. Maybe we have other opinions about that in terms of just the experience, not because it's like a class thing. I mean, the experience for the audience member, because you could be on such a higher than, you know, it's really hard to maintain that consistency. But yeah, we get a lot of people down, new people.
That's good. It's good. So I know I keep coming back to the quality of the headlines and stuff, but what's the secret? How do you secure these people?
Tenacity, is it? An absolute gall, you know. I am, and we are very audacious in here we approach. And I mean, no holds barred. Someone says, Matthew, someone at work keeps going, you need to get Trevor Noah on. I was like, all right. Who's their agent? Where's the O2? What can I get? And I'll message, don't hit anything back, obviously. But I'll reach out to a lot of people. And there are a couple of things that I try and do. One of which is I try my best to make... Oh, now, I'm not saying I handwrite every single message to everybody. There's like a bit in the middle, which is like, this is basically what we offer and what we've had so far. These are the acts, this is the space, and whatever. But I try and personalize each of the messages. You know, I refer to something I know, especially if I'm a big fan, and I'm a big fan of a lot of the acts that we get. So, you know, I'll say something about, well, you know, I try and personalize and I think that has a big effect. I've mentioned it to a few people, but find out who's touring, find out when they're touring, and then book them before they do that. Because I've noticed that they tend to announce their tour just as they're like a third or only halfway through. They're not even, you know, they're like, okay, I've got a tour coming in November. They may have just started looking at the material. Get them then. The other thing that I think has worked quite a few times is if they post an Instagram story, message them within 10 minutes of that.
Because they're still on their phone.
Because they're still online and they might be there and they're active. Yeah, and a lot of them do manage their own Instagram accounts. Not everybody, but a few of them do. So, yeah, they're the things. And that's really it. You know, I kind of just ask a lot. We pay our headliners as well. I think that's quite important. We pay our headliners. So I don't know what the impact would be if we didn't. But we haven't had to, I guess, negotiate. It's been the same fee for everybody. And it's been accepted by those that have come and done it. And a couple have said, don't worry about it, which is absolutely lovely and very kind.
Oh, that's lovely.
Yeah, yeah, which is really, really nice. So, yeah, they're the things. Just ask people that you enjoy, make it personal, try and catch them just before they go on tour. The next step for us would be, because now's like a period where people do work in progresses. Now, that's a bit different where people might be doing, we offer 20 minutes as a headline spot. Work in progresses could be 20 minutes, they could be 40, 45, up to an hour. And people offer their spaces. We're not prepared to do that yet, but that might be the next stage where we offer a night to one person to do theirs or one person plus a support act. Because they all have their own following, so similar to someone who, you know, be able to get them in, and that they might draw their own audience. So I feel like, you know, if we continue going on, that would be the progression for like next year, because this is now like preview season, ready for the fringes and all that sort of stuff.
I understand. That's a nice ambition to have. What we've seen so far, there's nothing in my head that says that won't work. You seem determined enough to make things like that work. So,
yeah, I think I'm really bullish and forceful, to be quite frank. And I don't know, I don't really have much shame.
I think that's probably the best way to be sometimes, though, isn't it?
Yeah, like I think people are just people. They can only say no. And it's so interesting. Yeah. And this is such a weird thing to say, but it's like the complete opposite to like my dating life. If someone says no, I'm like, I can't believe it. And I would never reach out. But when it comes to this, I'm like, well, you know, they can only say no.
Yeah, no, I completely get what you're talking about. It's just one of those where I think if you don't, my late mum always used to say, if you don't ask, you don't get. It really is as simple as that. You just want to. There's only one way you're going to find out.
Oh, 100%. And it's interesting to say that. I think, you know, I started my comedy, Christopher and I started, so Christopher Alley, who was on the first episode of the Prog podcast and also doing the OM podcast, Comedy Night as well. We started at the same time. And I think one of the reasons why it's kind of, we've been really into it is we've had, our mum was very, very ill. She's still with us. She's still alive. She's fine. She's just downstairs. But it was like such a formative time, and like us, and we were like, do you know what? We've only got one life. We kind of really need to just do what we want to do. And I feel like for me, that's one of the most important things. It's one thing that's really, really easy for me as well is I changed jobs. So I've kind of gone all in. So I had a job where it was quite intense. And I used to open restaurants and hotels and stuff as a trainer. Used to travel around. So I would get up at like 5 a.m, go to the gym, drive to Oxfordshire, go and do that, then come and do a gig, then go home, and I'd get like 5 or 6 hours sleep. And I was like, this is not sustainable. And then I didn't work for like 8 months or something. And then I was like, the comedy is it. So my job allows me to, and I asked them, like, you know, once I get my work done, can I do my bits and bobs? And they say yes. So I do all my booking, all my posts while I'm at work. So, because it takes hours. It takes messaging, researching people and messaging takes time.
Yes.
The booking takes time. It really does. It really, really does. Because for every, I don't know, boy, 25, 30 messages, I might get one back from a headliner saying they can do it.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's tough in some senses, but then it's also easy.
Yeah, I mean, I think you make it easy, don't you, on yourself if you enjoy doing it. And it doesn't feel like a chore. I guess you come across frustrations, but if you do a job that you love, then it never feels like a job.
Absolutely. I will say this, though, and I say it tongue-in-cheek, but also a little bit real. I don't think I enjoy running a night. I don't know what the long-term... It's definitely not... There's no short-term wins, it feels like. So I don't know if there's like mid-term wins or long-term wins, because I'm making connections and we're getting people in. But in the short, I'm like, Honestly, I'm like, why am I doing this? I'm not exactly sure why. It's so stressful. I get stressed. Like, I'm like, are the acts going to show up? Are they doing well? Are the audience going to come in? You know, I don't worry about the headline acts anymore. When we first started booking the big headline acts, I was like, oh my God, I hope they show up. One thing you can be certain of is if it's in the diary, they're coming no matter what. That is it. Unless something, and someone had said it to me before, when I was researching about doing a night, I spoke to another promoter who gets really good acts. And I was like, asking the same questions, how do you do it, blah, blah, blah. And I was like, do you get a lot of cancellations with headlines? She was like, absolutely never. Never, never, never. The ones you get it are from the people like myself who are just breaking into paid work and think, you know, if I'm giving them a free spot, they have to cancel to the other, or they're kind of, you know, maybe getting a bit too big for their boots, which we get, you know, the rising up level, I guess, or whatever. So, and when she said that, I was like, oh God, I'm going to be careful. I don't want to be canceling on nights just because I think I've got a better opportunity. But it's a hard one to give up, because if someone canceled their night saying that they've got a paid opportunity, I would 100% be like, you've got to take it. You have to.
Yeah.
You can't turn down a paid opportunity for practicing a new material. I believe that wholeheartedly at the growing level. But the headline acts, they're so consistent. Every act, every headline act has been there.
Cool. Excellent stuff. So come on, recount some of the, pick a funny moment, or one, some of the funniest moments you've seen on stage at Rise Up Comedy then.
The one that stands out in my mind is when, the first one actually is Al Murray, right? Because I don't know, it really surprised me. Like he came in early, they always do, and very respectful, spoke to everybody. Everyone was like falling over him. That was our first and only sold out night, right? We had to turn people away. Then, you know, it was a lot, and it was amazing. Came in, he was preparing and stuff like that. And then I looked him online and stuff, and I always know he's got a drink when he goes on stage. So I was like, when should I get your drinks? Whatever, like that. And he was like, can you just get me these, please? Thank you very much, brother. There, just da da da. And then just before he went on, he got his garb on. He wears his sort of jacket and his tie and stuff.
Yeah.
It's just very mild mannered. And then as soon as he went on, he got his 2 pints and he was like, and then started pouring the pints all over everybody in the audience. And I was like, oh my God, I did not expect that. And it was just so different from him preparing there to going on stage and throwing alcohol all over everybody on the stage. So I thought that was really, really funny. And it was really interesting to see. And the other one, we get really, really good acts and they do really well, as you might imagine. But Ori Styler is someone who I gigged with last year and has just been really, really friendly and helpful to me just in general. And he came and you would think that he was performing in the O2. Like, he made that room so big and he filled it and it was just echoing and it was madness. And he wasn't going to do this material, but there was this young kid who'd moved. He lived with his family and they were there. He was a young kid. He was 19 years old and he was there with his parents. And it was very cute. They live in Harston, just close by. And he did this material because he was like, I bet you never knew that Beyonce was in a girl band. And he was the kid, this 19 year old was like, no, I didn't know that. And everybody lost their mind. It was ridiculous. And so Ori posted it online and you'll see it in the clip. And I was like, can you add us as a collaborator, please? But he never did, I guess. Because it's got over 8 million views now online. So I'm like, oh, that's our creepy mirror in the back. So that was the biggest sort of post. But he wasn't even going to post it as well. And I was like, I think you should. And he did. Yeah. And it was just one of those things that just blew up.
Oh, that's amazing. That is amazing. So I guess if we kind of roll back slightly to being open mic based, what's you may be doing already, but what is there one thing you'd like to see change on the open mic circuit?
Interestingly enough, I'd like to see fewer nights. It's too much. In London specifically. I don't know about outside of London, because I don't often travel for open mics because it's expensive. Right, and now that I've changed my job to one that's a lot less responsibility, means a lot less money. So I try my best not to. But I think that these sort of weekly nights or 2, 3, 4 nights a week are really, really difficult, because there are a lot of acts. So there's a lot of demand for that, but it's really hard to run a good night. I know that from doing this one, and it's, you know, people from the outside, I'm not saying it's not a good night. I think it is a good night, but it's...
Yeah.
It's hard to do. If I didn't have this job, I wouldn't be able to put as much effort into it. And getting acts is really hard and getting an audience. So I just think somehow, which is impossible, it's not going to change. You know, I just think if we could just run fewer nights but make them a little bit better, then I think that would be a great thing. You know, I'm a big fan of having the bring and no bring a debate personally, and I haven't made up my mind about what I think just yet. I think they serve a purpose. I don't think they should be forever, but yeah, fewer nights, or, you know, not running so often, because I just think you give yourself a bit more time to run it, because you can go to some really dreadful open mics, really.
Yeah.
Really, really bad ones.
I think the bring a no bring a debate is such an interesting thing. No comedian wants to go to an open mic night and travel and do something in front of, I know you said you've done it, but in front of seven other comedians. There's seven other audience members. Yeah, okay. Seven other comedians, it can be a little bit tough at times, because there's a certain section of comedians, I think, on the open mic circuit are there to do their bit and go home, rather than be there, be part of the audience, be part of the night, and be part of the experience. So I think bringing the friends along, I think, can work. I think there has to be caveats in that, though, sometimes. And this is kind of a purely selfish one. I travel in from outside of London, and you try and convince somebody to go, okay, I want you to pay 20 quid to go on a train. I want you to pay an extra 10, 15 pound on food and drink, and you're going to see nobody you know other than me. And you're going to have to sit there until 10 o'clock at night. Sometimes that can be a bit tough. I know there's some nights out there that have a rule that if you travel from outside of London or travel extensively far, then the bringers are, don't worry about it, it's fine, because you're making that effort to be there for that night, which I think is a nice compromise. But then I've turned up to non-bringer shows and you just sat there in front of, I've decided to bring somebody to a non-bringer show and they were the audience. And you're just like, and when you bring that person that's come just to support you and wants to just sit there and watch you and enjoy watching you, and then you've got every act and the MC is only ever asking that person a question, it makes them feel really awkward.
It's absolutely brutal.
What are you thinking of the show so far? And you're like, it's okay.
It's fine, I guess. I will say this, though, because like a lot of people say that when you do a bring a night, it's like lazy marketing. And I agree with that. I agree, because my worry is that a lot of places that do bring a night don't do the marketing. Now, I know that for our night, I have to post. It is relentless, but I try and post every day. I'm trying to think about, okay, we've got, now we're going to try and do some reels. And then nights, a lot of nights that do it, like I'm trying to post some reels to gain more people. I contact local area things, you know, Instagram pages. We've got a fundraiser coming up in a school. So we're really trying to ingratiate ourselves within the environment, because it seems like, and I might be wrong because I'm making really big generalizations, but it feels like a lot of the bringer nights, they just book the acts, then come up on the day that it is the end, post the lineup, that's it, right? And I just don't think personally that's the way that night should be run. Not only are you booking acts, but you need to be promoting your night and yourselves and the act. You know, I am, again, quite ballsy. If a headline act hasn't posted, I ask them. Sometimes they say no, they've got their own shows to post, and I completely understand. Yeah. But I'll ask the question. You know, we pay for our marketing. So, all the boosts and stuff that you need to do, and I'm trying to figure out ways that we can do it more. But if you're doing a bring a night, I still think that you need to put the effort, hopefully, into marketing your own event, because the aim, I think, should be to not have a bring a night and to put on a good show. But that is not everybody's aim. Bring a night is useful to start off with, but if it's your only method of business, I completely understand when people say you're being lazy marketing, because you are. You're not doing any. You're not marketing at all, in fact.
Yeah. Yeah, I do think that when it comes to people that put on nights, it's especially those that put on maybe once or twice a week, I think it's when you see they don't put who's performing, which then doesn't allow the act to then share, tag, whatever, it kind of feels one-sided, especially when they say, oh, can you promote this for us? Can you, you know, let everybody know you're performing here? Yeah, okay, I'll do that. But can you let everyone else know that I'm performing here as well? Because your audience is much bigger than mine. And if your audience sees me on the bill and comes to see the night, then they've got an immediate way of getting into what I'm doing as well. And just, you know, you organically grow together.
That's so interesting that you say that, because like I've been messing around with the posters and stuff, because I was like, I asked, would you, because the good thing about the big headline acts is as like acts, growing acts, or, you know, up and coming acts like us, I'm like, oh, I get to say that I was on this poster with this person. So I changed it so that we'd have both the acts, you know, the bringer spots or non-bringer spots, or developing acts on the same one as that, because we didn't have that initially. I'd do a headliner, then the acts. But it's just things like that, trying to think about ways it may be successful, it may not be, you know, creating reels and dynamic ones so that you can, it's more inviting. But you do, you know, people want to see their own face, you know, people want to see their own face, and they want to sit next to someone that they deem as successful. And so seeing your name next to Al Murray on the same lineup is one of those things you'll remember.
Oh, 100%.
And share,
100%.
You know, so it is really, really important to do that. And again, do you know what? It takes work to create these posters.
Yep.
It really does. I don't know how people cut around, because I'm like, I've tried to do that. It takes me ages for one picture. I'm not doing that. I'm putting it in a box. I'm not doing it.
all these little things. Really, these days, Canva.
Man, me and Canva, man, we're besties. Besties. I love it.
But no, I mean, I remember the first time I even just seeing my name on a lineup. Not a picture, just saw my name on the lineup on the website of Downstairs at the King's Head. It was like, oh, this is kind of real. And then I saw my name on a poster for just another comedy club in St. Albans. And my picture was on it this time. First time it wasn't. Second time it was. And it was like, oh, it's just nice. And it feels like it's proper.
It does. It's really, really nice, you know. People select some mad photos, though, for themselves. I'm like, why? 100%. What are you doing, bruv? Like, please send me a nice picture. It's like, again, I don't know why I'm referring to Satan, but I'm like, how have you got this fuzzy picture, man? This is 2024. You need to have a better phone. You need someone to take a picture. And it's the same for these comedy ones. Just take a selfie against the backdrop. These holiday pics are not the one. I'll tell you this now. What are you doing? Why you got sunglasses on?
I think the collaboration between promoters and the acts is so, so important, because everyone then just makes it cohesive, and there's a whole you build that community again. And I think that's what some things that some people could do a little bit better than stuff like that.
I think it's so, so important, right? Because, and it's, you know, and one of the prompts that you'd said, and I'd been thinking about what makes our night stand out. I was like, what makes it stand out? What is it we're trying to do? Because, you know, it's a night, we get the act. One of the things are the headliners, right? You know, but one of the things that's really, really important for me is creating an environment. And Christopher, again, you know, we're very similar little ways. He talks about it a lot. I went to the OM for the first time yesterday. And when I tell you the environment is absolutely spectacular, I don't go to open mics, right, if I'm not performing, because I'm gigging 5 or 6 times a week. That night needs to be non-comedy, right? The night's off. I needed a drink yesterday after all this decorating in this room. And so I went, and it was close by to me, and I laughed so much. It was so good. And it's so important. So for us, I really want to create an environment that people feel is a good night, because you're going to get it from word of mouth, both from audience and from the act. So even if it's not a laugh riot, you know that you were treated with respect. I know when I first started doing open mics that some promoters probably felt like they were doing the acts a favor by putting them on and asking them to do a bringer. No. The acts are performing. They're providing a service. Now, if you're not going to pay them in funds, pay them in respect. All right. Pay them in stage time, but it's mutual, because if they're not there, you don't have a night. You do not have a night if they are not there. Okay, you're not doing them a favor, right? You're working together. You really, really are working together. And I want to try and be able to provide that as much as possible for the act, treat them with respect, and know that we're thankful that they're coming. And it shows not just the headline acts, but also the acts who are coming, anyone that comes to perform and steps through, thank you so much, you know. And some people do the bringer swap, you know, so in with the bringer nights, acts will bringer come and watch a show for them, so they'll do the same, which is God's work, because now you're doing 6 hours, 5 or 6 hours for 5 minutes worth of stage time. You love this too much. And I was doing the same, you know. I'm not charging any of those people. So we talk about payment, right? We do donations. I will not ask any act that I know is an act to pay, because I know you've already sat there for 3 hours to so that you can perform 5 minutes somewhere else, right? I don't, so it's I just think there's just certain levels of respect, and it is mutual. You really need to treat the acts like they're providing a service, and they're, you know, professional, I think.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. I think that's kind of lots of the questions I had in mind we've kind of gone through, and I think it's been hugely informative for anybody that wants to go and see a higher class of act. I would implore to go to Kendall Rise and go and see this and learn some skills that you may not have, or just, you know, watch other people do their stuff.
Yeah, absolutely. And I will say this, I can say this at the moment now. One of the reasons why I don't like running a night is I stress easily about stupid little things. And one of them is if we haven't booked our headliners or anyone for 2 months, I'm stressed.
Yeah.
I'm stressed. And we've got our acts booked now until May, the headline acts. So now we're in February.
Oh, excellent.
So I'm stress-free for about 2 weeks, and then we're going to get to mid-May, the mid-May show. But there are some, I'm like, oh, I can't believe we got you. There's still some I'm trying to get, though. There's still some I'm trying to get. But we've got some good ones. We've got some really good ones coming up. So I'm excited, and hopefully people come and see and enjoy. And if any of comedians are listening out there, I'd like to apologize if I can't get you in the night, or we can't get you in the straight away. There are more acts than there are spaces, and there are even fewer, I guess, non-bringer spots. And it's really, really difficult, because the overwhelming number of people that apply are of a specific demographic, which is a straight white male, right?
Yep.
And I'd like to, that's one thing I'd like to see change. It might not be necessarily open mic as well, but I question whether, like, these lineups have to be all straight white male, especially if they're near or in a big city. Like, yeah. I'm quite interested about it. Maybe because one of the reasons I think that it is because we pretty much only get that demographic apply. And I mean that, like, 95% of the people that ask, both in DMs and on the form, are that. So we have to go out and ask women. I have to go to the queer community and ask them. So I haven't mentioned I'm gay, if you can't tell. You're not watching the video. And I know my voice is so masculine. we just have to go out and try and, you know, and there are even fewer black acts. Like, you know, that's really important to me, because people think as well, we'll get women. We've got one woman on. That's great. Okay. You know, we've got a gay person on. That's great. But it's so hard to get black acts, you know, because I don't see that many around, if I'm honest. And so it's really difficult to get the acts, and we're trying our best. Some lineups aren't as successful as others, in being as the most diverse it can be. And so keep asking, I guess, but also we'll ask you.
No, I understand. I mean, even doing this, I've gone out and asked people that want a bit that I know that I think can kickstart this whole podcast and get things going and stuff like that. But then there's also some people that come to me and say, I'd really love to come on and do this and do that. Oh, great. Okay. And then you go down the demographic and you're kind of like, okay, that means I'm going to have 6 podcasts in a row where the demographic is exactly the same. And it's not trying to fit people in for the sake of fitting it in. It's to give diversity and difference to things, so that those that may not be able to relate to that demographic don't go, I'm not going to listen to this, because if it's just another same demographic again, then it's not going to be, it may not interest them. Whereas I try to then get people in that I think are can add a bit of mix to it, and then I have to shuffle people around just so I break up the demographic. Which it sounds like the whole woke trying to include everyone, but there's nothing wrong with that. It's what we're trying to do. We're trying to represent what's actually out there.
And I'm as left and liberal as they come. Oh, sorry.
No. I just find it's a bit. Sometimes I have to check myself and go, am I just trying to tick a box? And I'm not trying to tick a box. I want the diversity, and I want people to understand. So when sometimes I have somebody who comes on and says, oh, I'd love to be on it podcast, this is my brief history and CV as such. And like, oh, that's really good. Currently, it's about 10 weeks before it'll appear. So do you want to wait that long? Or we can schedule something in later on. And there's always the caveat is that if something else comes up, then you may get shuffled another week. And it's not a personal thing. It's to keep everything interesting, different, and diverse. Because all I'm doing is asking the same questions to the same demographic. Yes, the answers can vary differently, but a white male's perspective of what happens on when they go out is very different to a black gay guy's thing on his night out and where they go to perform and stuff like that. And it's just trying to make it as inclusive and educational as. Does that make sense, or have I just waffled on about crap?
No, I think it makes sense. And people worry about it being a tick box exercise, and I don't necessarily think it's a tick box exercise. I think it's a conscious effort, because I think it's easily missed. You can easily let things go, because if the large number of them are a certain demographic or not as diverse as it necessarily needs to be, or representative of the community, you have to make an effort to do it. So I need to look at my lineup and actually, or whatever it is you're doing, you know, and be critical about it. So it might be tick boxing, but I don't want to put anyone on that I don't think is good just because they're a certain demographic. I'll tell you that now. Okay. Yes, like, I'm not going to do it. But I spoke about doing a podcast to you before, and I did it, and we put on a few people that we thought, I was like, I don't know if they'll be a good guest, but they have a lot of following. They fit a certain niche. Turns out those were some of the not most successful episodes that we'd had. So coming into running a show, the first thing is I want to enjoy the act. I do. Right. That's the first thing. The next one is will other people enjoy them? There are some that I might necessarily act like. They might not fit my. It took me a while to get into alt comedy, for example. Let's just be like frank. Right. So I never listened to. I'm very straight down the line with my comedy. Right. It needs to be as basic bitch as possible. That's why I watch Selling Sunset. And so when I started going to these nights and seeing alternative comedy, I was like, this isn't for me. Eventually I started seeing it more, and I was like, this is something I can't do. And I love it. For that reason.
Yeah.
So I don't just look at my own response. If I've seen them on other nights, I will see the response that they get and try as consistently as I can. But you do have to make that conscious effort. As someone who fits a certain demographic, which is gay black male, this is really interesting. And if anyone listens to it, I'd love to see or hear. I have not met or seen in the UK another gay black male. Now, it's particular, right? It's not just gay or gay black male in the UK. In America, they've got a few. Now, there's one big act who it came out while they were performing. But in my head, I'm like, okay, I fit that. And I'm happy to be the one and only, but it's only so we can get more. But it feels like I'm one of one at the moment. So I'm always shocked when I'm not on a lineup, because I'm like, you're getting both, bitch. You're getting both. You know, so you need to have me. You need me, okay? I don't need you. You need me. So, you know, we make a conscious effort of trying to be as well-rounded as we can be. Sometimes we don't get it right all the time. But it's not just about how people look. It is also about the range of acts. And that's one thing that I think is really, really important, because, it's also about, the range of performance, ages, all the sorts of things, not just race, sexuality. They're the easy ones sometimes. Yeah. Oh, we've got, you see it from the outside, but what about how they perform?
Yeah. They've always got to be a good performer and have got to fit in with what you want the nights to be and stuff like that. I think that's quite an interesting little bit of discussion to kind of close out on. And I like that. That's cool. So what's the social links you've got? And I'll get them added into the description of the podcast so people can find you more easily.
Excellent. So we are just on Instagram at the moment, and it's Rise Up Comedy London. And I think that's the only one we have. So we post on like the Facebook group. No, we've got a Facebook page, but no one uses Facebook these days, really. So yeah, that's what we have. So Rise Up Comedy London, we run every other Tuesday, and we've introduced a pro night, which is going to be, it's essentially every fourth show, but you'll see the posts for it about when they are. Look out for the form. So we tend to book, when it comes to forms, we book it 2 months in advance. So we'll do like January and February would have come out early December, for example. So we do it in 2 months. That's because we only do four shows, you know, every other week, it's two per month. Please come down to a show. We do, you know, I don't want to, it's difficult. I don't want to discourage people applying. The more applications, the better. It means more work we have to go through, but it means we can get more people in. But we don't run that often. And now that we have more people on the lineup that people want to perform with, it's harder to get people booked in. So like anything, I guess it's just persistence as well. And if I see you in person, that's probably the best way. Hound me or Zach, because you've got to be rude, innit? You've got to be rude to come up and say, listen, put me on your night. Be forward.
Fair enough. Cool. Okay. And you can find us on Instagram at Open Mic Comedy Pod, and all the W's openmiccomedypod.com. Whichever platform you're listening to this on, please give it a review. A nice 5-star rating wouldn't not go amiss. It helps boost the amount of people that can see it. And also, if you know anybody else that'd be interested in listening to this, please share it with them, get them involved. And yeah, thank you very much, Matthew.
Thank you, Mark. Thank you for having me. I really enjoyed it.
And until next time, see you all soon.